The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum, and I'm joined in studio by John Lahart, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin South West, spokesperson on the European Union for his party, Jennifer Whitmore, Social Democrats TD for Wicklow, spokesperson for Climate, Environment, Energy and Transport, and Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter with the Irish Independent. John, I want to start with you because we got the news earlier on the programme that Brian Crowley, former MEP, had passed away.
Yes, indeed, and really, to do justice to him, you should really have a Cork colleague, but I will do my best. You interviewed him many times. Over the years.
I mean, he was in a wheelchair, as we know, and this was as a result of an accident that happened to him as a young man.
Absolutely. I had the privilege of working as an advisor to Minister of State Tom Kitt back in the early 90s. Albert Reynolds was Taoiseach. Albert appointed Brian Crowley to the Shannon in 1993. Albert was clearly mad about him. He was nominated to run for the European elections in 1994, and I remember travelling down to Cork to that convention, and it was a different era. Packed hotel with hundreds of delegates, lots of controversy. I think Michael Smith, former minister, chaired it. Jackie Healy-Ray, the late Jackie Healy-Ray, was a member of Fianna Fáil then and a very prominent member of Fianna Fáil then. I remember him making an absolute rousing speech that day. And that's really when Brian Crowley was introduced to the wider political world, topped the poll in every election he contested, and represented Munster from 1994 to 2014, was touted as a potential presidential candidate at one time. I think his health just kept tripping him up.
Absolutely, because when he was in Europe,
an unfortunate phrase for me to use, because
but literally, I mean, he had to opt out of a lot of his European duties from time to time because of health concerns, and ultimately, that's what led him to step down.
Yeah, we have a WhatsApp group, like most parliamentary parties do, and this morning it's just desperate bad news is probably the quote that captures it best. Miriam O'Callaghan, I remember, had him on. Most people had him on their shows. He was a very talented musician. As well, pianist, guitarist, entertained us all at Ardeshna. I met him in the European context on a number of occasions. Taoiseach has paid tribute to him this morning as well. As I said, my Cork colleagues particularly feel his loss most profoundly this morning. So my sympathies and all our sympathies are with his mom, Sally, and the wider Crowley family.
And when I think of him, I think of good humour and charm.
Yeah, and a lovely smile. Great hair, long hair. A lot of your modern audience, contemporary audience, possibly don't know him. They'll get to know him over the next few days. He was, you know, every so often in political life, someone larger than life comes along. And he was one of those characters.
And someone about whom little ill was ever spoken.
Absolutely.
Jennifer, did he mean anything to you?
To be honest, I wouldn't be familiar with my, from, you know, I didn't know him personally.
He was before your time, literally.
But I must say, I mean, that tribute, you can really feel how important he was to Fianna Fáil and indeed to Munster. And I think John really did a very good job there in remembering him.
And again, I suspect the wrong generation for you.
Definitely. You were saying that he represented Munster from 1994, so I was just around by that stage. a lovely tribute. And I think particularly when somebody says in politics that no ill will was spoken about somebody, that's quite an achievement.
All right, we'll move on with the agenda of the day. And really, a week dominated by Davos one way or the other, whether it was Mark Carney's brilliant speech or whether it was Trump's rambling R-plus long speech, whether it was NATO being salvaged from what looked like possible destruction and Zelensky having a go at Europe itself. A very interesting week, Tabitha.
Yeah, I don't know where we start with the week because so much happened in such a short space of time. And I was watching the speech that Trump gave at Davos, and I don't often watch the entirety of what Donald Trump says in terms of the speeches. You will watch the clips, etc. But I was over in the UN at the General Assembly there in September, and Trump gave that incredible speech again. And at the time he said, well, you know, my teleprompter is broken. And I remember in my head going, well, this is what we get now. When the teleprompter is broken, he just goes off. And actually, no, it turns out that that's just exactly what he does. I think something positive that has come out of Davos, because I think a lot of people were quite concerned that Ukraine was going to be overshadowed by what was going on with Greenland, but we are seeing that there are going to be some meetings, the first trilateral meeting since the war began in Ukraine, which is something positive. I know that there is some details left of that deal. Vladimir Zelensky had said, you know, we're very, very nearly there. There's one issue in particular that they have to agree on. I would assume that a lot of that has got to do with land and the Donbass territory, which is going to be a massive deal. So we're seeing a lot of promising things coming out of that from the Ukraine point of view.
What was extraordinary to me, Jennifer, was the way the man tells barefaced lies. I mean, you take a simple one. China sells windmills to the world, but doesn't generate any wind energy itself. It generates 40% of the wind energy in the world is generated in China. They have 135 offshore wind farms, many hundreds more on land. And he just dishes this out and everybody. Now, I presume the educated audience in Davos knew he was telling a barefaced lie, but yet nobody shouts rubbish.
Yeah, and look, I don't think he's not talking to the audience in Davos. I think he's talking to his home base, and unfortunately, an awful lot of Americans aren't questioning, and the ones that do question, he just shuts them down. You know, he threatens them. So I think what I really appreciated, actually, Pat, when you started this discussion, was the first person you mentioned was Mark Carney. And I think actually that's where the focus should be on what came out of the week, because his speech was incredible. He didn't mention Trump or the US once, but he really spelled out, you know, there is a pathway forward. And, he spoke about a new world order. If your listeners haven't heard it or read about it, I certainly recommend it. It's been, you know, touted as one of the best political speeches. But, you know, talking about this new world order, how the old world order has been ruptured. But there is a pathway, and it's about all these, you know, middle countries coming together, building alliances, working together for the good. And actually, that's the only way that we're going to get beyond Trump and his bullying and his rhetoric. And really, that really took the wind out of Trump's sails,
He found a way, though, to walk out and not to save face, I suppose, by cutting this deal. But his comments about NATO continued to cause upset among politicians, including the former UUP leader, Doug Beattie. He was outraged when Donald Trump said NATO troops stayed away from the front line during the conflict. The Stormont MLA said it's a complete insult, and he's calling on Prime Minister Keir Starmer to stand up for veterans in the light of Trump's comments. Have a listen.
The president will have absolutely no idea. He uses sound bites, he uses words, he uses insults, and he needs to be taken to task in regards to that.
So, John, Keir Starmer taking Trump to task over effectively insulting those who served alongside the United States in its conflicts, particularly when they invoked Article 5 after 9/11, and people died, proportionately more Danes per head of population than anybody else.
Yeah, and it's not the first disagreement that Starmer has had with him this week, which is kind of comforting, I suppose, from our perspective. Look, it's like what he throws out, these things that the European Union, Europe has contributed, or that the USA has contributed far more in terms of billions to the Ukrainian peace, whereas actually the European Union is the single biggest contributor to assistance and aid.
And what's happening now is that the Americans are contributing nothing. Any weaponry that is American is being purchased by Europe to be used by Ukraine. So not even there.
No, and I think what was interesting, I mean, the two previous speakers mentioned Carney. And like, I do think Canada is like a mega version of us in the world. And what Brexit was like for us is that they've had this rupture. And they recognize, I think Carney's recognized before everybody else, that the world is not going back. Mm-hmm. The page has been turned. Things may happen down the road, but we can't even depend on those things happening. I'm chair of the Foreign Affairs and Trade Committee. We were in Canada for a few days before Christmas. And the sense of betrayal, sense of shock, and anxiety among Canadians, but that betrayal piece of, look, we were their allies, we fought alongside them, that's a key piece of it. The Newsom piece, to come back to what Tabitha was saying, sorry, about when the auto cue goes off, Gavin Newsom made this point during the week, if you want to hear the real Trump, it's when the auto cue goes off and he starts talking himself. However, I would caution about this. I think that because people think, you know, that he stepped down. Look at where we were at the start of the week. And there are some observers kind of trying to psychologically decipher how Trump operates. And so this was classic. At the start of the week, he throws out the most outrageous possibility, you know, invasion of Greenland, purchase of Greenland. But by the end of the week, has he got what he wanted?
Well, now, everything he seems to have got, he was on the cards anyway.
Yeah.
The Danes, I mean, they looked probably with some dismay as those American bases, 17 of them were reduced to one after the Cold War. Mm. And then this guy is saying, we need Greenland. And I mean, he had 4 years before Biden, he had 4 years. What did he do then about Iceland? Nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, about not being au fait with facts. John Stewart, The Daily Show, had a really good parody of him during the week. You know, why do you want Greenland? Because we don't want Russia as neighbours. And this is just, but however, as we were talking outside before the show, it would be funny if state-backed militia weren't on the streets of states and the capital of states in America.
I mean, these are the stormtroopers, Trump's stormtroopers.
Absolutely. So this is very real. He stepped back from it. The Board of Peace, I think, which we may get to talk about again, is such a, look, it's such an
outrageous. Well, we can talk about it now because it is an affront to any right-thinking people that you've got two war criminals, not yet convicted because Netanyahu will never be found before the International Criminal Court. And the same will be true of Putin. Yeah. They'll never actually have to face the music. But there's no doubt when you look at Bucha in Ukraine, game, set and match, war crime. When you look at the kidnapping of Ukrainian children, game, set and match, war crime. When you see what happened in Gaza on Netanyahu's watch and the destruction of hospitals and the killing of multiple children. Again, war crimes, game, set and match.
And the notion, I mean, I think the Taoiseach was very good on this, but the notion that you can kind of free market your way out of Gaza and create this kind of resort.
Jennifer?
Yeah, look, I was really surprised and disappointed, actually, that the Irish government hasn't just come out and said that, you know, we're not going to consider this. I mean, I think
Helen McEntee has been equivocal about it, saying we have to make sure it's concentrating on Gaza and not something else before we go further.
Absolutely. And so the Taoiseach has left the door open to it. I mean, he's saying, we have to consider, you know. I think it's really important that there is just an absolute no to this. I mean, it should be renamed the Board of Autocrats and War Criminals. I mean, it's disgraceful.
The only European one there is Orban. Well, there are two Europeans.
The Hungrier, yeah. So I like, you know, so I think even that we just have to come out and just be very strong on this. There's no way to be countenancing or examining it or anything. Or, you know, I think the time for Europe to sort of be kowtowing to the bullying tactics of Trump is over. And I think actually that's really what I took from what Mark Carney did. Like, he was very strong, not just in his words, but he has spent the past number of months building alliances. He has deals with China.
He has been deft.
And, you know, he has all these, you know, car deals and everything because he's been protecting Canada. And I think, you know, Europe now needs to decide, we have another 3 years of Trump. Are we going to continue to be on our knees in dealing with them, or actually are we going to, you know, actually push back the way
there is a massive question over the credibility of this Board of Peace, especially when the likes of France and the UK are saying no, but also when Trump is essentially threatening an ally in France that he's going to impose a 200% tariff on French wine if you don't become part of this board, and it's for a board of peace, and you're threatening it. Just it doesn't match. It's an incredible.
But I mean, this is a man who kidnapped the head of state in Venezuela. No. We, none of us like Maduro very much, but at the same time, going and lifting someone, killing 100 people around him without any thought of the collateral damage that's attached to that, stealing their oil and flogging it. I mean, this is supposed to be the Board of Peace.
No, exactly. And it just makes absolutely no sense. And then when you see the new Gaza plan that Jared Kushner has come out with today, which I think is extraordinary, and these beautiful PowerPoint presentations with fabulous skyscrapers and these, you know, computerized pictures that have come out. And he's saying that this could happen between 2 and 3 years' time. That's a minimum amount of time it'll take to clear the rubble in Gaza.
Well,
and
I think that's more or less what he was saying, that they might have managed to build housing for the reconstruction workers in 3 years.
I think, I want to be really clear that the answer the Taoiseach gave to two questions may have been conflated. He's very clear when he was asked, you know, do you see any scenario where Ireland could actually join that organisation, the Board of Peace, and do you have any concerns about the extent of its remit? And it was the second part of the question he answered, did he have any concerns about the extent of its remit? Yes, I do. The remit is much wider than envisaged by the UN Charter for the Board of Peace. So I don't think he could have been, you know, he hasn't equivocated. He's been very clear. And he's also stated, you know, there's a role for Ireland here in terms of peacekeeping. The Palestinian ambassador, who I would have met a number of months ago, would have, people want to harness, people who are really interested in genuine peace want to harness Ireland's knowledge about decommissioning and our knowledge and experience from the peace process here. And the Taoiseach accentuated that in his comments last night as well.
The Taoiseach did say he had concerns, but then he said that they will seek further clarification and that they were eager to work for peace in Gaza. Now, the Board of Peace.
I mean, would you be happy putting your hand in your pocket, in the taxpayer's pocket, and giving $1 billion to anything Donald Trump was running? Yeah. The answer is no.
I mean, it's a ridiculous proposition, and I don't think.
And I'm making it clear on behalf of the Taoiseach that that's the Taoiseach's intent.
Well, what I would say is that the Taoiseach shouldn't be seeking clarification.
I want to move on to Zelensky's chiding of Europe. He had a point. You know, Europe has got to find its identity, find its own sense of power. It's a huge market. There are many countries which have a very strong military. A couple of them, France and the UK, are, well, they're both NATO countries. They both have nuclear weapons. You know, Europe is not as weak as it sometimes demonstrates itself to think it is.
No, and I think Donald Trump's walking back of, you know, taking over Greenland and being equivocal in that, you know, the US must own Greenland in order to defend it. But then I think what we're hearing now from the EU and from the Irish government is that cool heads worked out in the end and we need to be calm. And I think some people have interpreted that as weakness, that there wasn't these strong rhetoric coming out. He wasn't the only one who was very critical. We were talking about Gavin Newsom outside. He was saying, "Everybody, you guys are pathetic. What are you doing? You need to stand up tall." So there's a lot of criticism coming the EU's way. I think there's a balance to be struck between being very strong in your words, but also maybe maintaining a cool head at the same time.
The Finnish Prime Minister, I thought, was quite inspirational during the week. Look, they're closest to the Ukrainian situation, the Russian situation. And he said, look, you know, what has Russia achieved here in the last number of years? One, Ukraine is now European. Two, NATO has now enlarged. Three, the rest of Europe is preparing itself, not necessarily militarily, but is on a footing that it never was. It never was before. Can we defend ourselves? Can we combat the Russian threat? Yes, absolutely we can. And I think that's a message that we need to be aware of. Because the Taoiseach, I just want to finish this point, Pat. Taoiseach has said repeatedly during the week in the Dáil, the biggest threat that we face still, despite all this chatter about Trump, because we have huge support in America, and there's a democratic peace in America as well. Biggest threat we face is Russia.
Undoubtedly, the question of this peace that is beckoning for Zelensky, and the question of territory. I mean, maybe this will all collapse. You know, all the optimistic noise is being made about a peace between Russia and Ukraine. Maybe it's all going to just collapse in the next couple.
Well, look, I think we're just going to, like, things are just changing so quickly at the moment. It's really difficult to ascertain. Like, we're in a place now where we, 5 years ago, we could never, ever have imagined.
Even
a year ago, So it's very difficult. But look, hopefully there is a pathway for them. I think probably one of the things that, you know, when you're talking about what Russia has done, I think the biggest threat at the moment globally is the undermining of international law,
and Russia and Israel.
I think what's going to become key as part of these meetings that are going to happen in the UAE is two things. Firstly, we're going to see how serious Russia actually is in terms of coming up with a deal, or are they playing a game here that they want to just engage? But also, if there's any kind of concessions in terms of land, which you mentioned earlier, is this something that Zelensky is going to be able to sell to the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian army?
Well, they're war weary at the moment. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. We should turn to domestic matters briefly. First of all, Mercosur being sent to the European Court of Justice might delay it for at least, 6 months, maybe a year, maybe 2 years. That's a bit embarrassing, shall we say. You know, you sign the deal in Paraguay, you have it ratified by the parliament, and then the farming lobby gets it kind of thrown into touch.
I wish we could start Mercosur again. Why? Because the deal, the New York Times captured it in a headline, you know, that it represented a deal between the EU and what is the common market of the South, a market of 700 million people that's institutionally based and rules based, and at a time when the USA is using coercion to do deals. Okay, so it's a perfect model. However, and it would amount to a trading bloc looking at 30% of the world's GDP.
So would you have voted for it?
I would have, but you know, we all made mistakes. We didn't lead on it. It is where it is now. I want to commend my colleagues and MEPs who have done a lot of work to bring in safeguards to it. And I hope that court can make a quick decision on it.
Jennifer?
I think probably where we are at the moment is I would imagine it'll be implemented provisionally. I would think that's the case. But look, I think it's regretful.
The democratic vote has to be respected too, I think.
And I think it's regretful that actually, like, what we've seen over particularly the last year is the government pretending that they were opposing it when in actual fact it didn't seem that they were, you know, doing the homework and doing the hard work.
Would you have voted?
We would have voted against it. I mean, I think there was just sort of fundamental standards that weren't being met. I think, you know...
Isn't that just the farming lobby pretending that's really what they're worried about?
I mean, I would have
it's about price, really.
Well, I would have had major concerns about the environmental impact on countries like Brazil and the Amazon. I have concerns in relation to health, food and health standards. So I think there was sort of fundamental problems with it. I don't think they were unresolvable.
Okay.
I think that there could have been work to address those, but unfortunately they weren't.
It was going to be a deal, though, and will be a deal that Ireland will ultimately benefit from at the end of the day, especially when we look at the pharmaceutical and the chemical sector.
And
especially at a time when we're talking about tariffs and the US, you know, using it as a tool to harm allies. I think opening trade routes. We see government ministers are flying all over the country, all over the world, trying to open trade links. So I think it will be positive.
In a related manner, and it's just a yes or a no answer to you, John. Should the chair of On Board Be a resign?
No.
Jennifer?
I'm really worried about this. I mean, like, I've been looking into it and it seems that it was less than 1%.
What percentage does it become critical then?
I don't know. You know, I think, look, we obviously always need to be examining governance and ensuring there's strong governance. But to me, this seems like a political play by Sinn Féin, particularly in light of the Mercosur and the publicity around Brazilian beef.
Should he resign or not?
I think examine it, but from what I know, no.
Tabitha, do as I say, not do as I do. Should he resign?
Well, I think from what Agriculture Minister Martin Hayden was saying, that, you know, is it responsible for us to respond in an emotional way to these news reports? And I think you have to take the context of Mercosur into this. But at the end of the day, there was no rules broken by him or the company.
All right, we will leave it there. My thanks to John Lahart.
Before you say that, because this is your penultimate show.
And so
it's great privilege. It's a great privilege to be here with you. We mentioned, we started talking about a political legend, you're a radio legend. So
I'm blushing.
Very best of luck with the
new weekend show, which will start at the beginning of March.
Absolutely.
Look, thanks very much for all of that. So that was John Lahart, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin South West, spokesperson on the European Union. Jennifer Whitmore, Social Democrats TD for Wicklow, spokesperson for Climate, Environment, Energy and Transport, and Tabitha Monahan, political reporter with the Irish Independent.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.